latest episode of Decoded, a podcast by Marriott Digital Services, bringing together the smartest minds and best leaders in the digital space, where we're going to put together a 10-part series on all things digital marketing. Switching it up, my name is Mike Jezaitis, and I'm the Director of Program Management for Digital Services, and I'm joined by our Director of Customer Success, Chris Robinson. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, man. Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year to you. As you can tell, if you've been a longtime listener for the two previous shows, Chris is traditionally the host, and I'm kind of the color commentary guy, but we're switching it up this week because Chris had a big week last week. He was the inaugural camp director for our virtual Team MDS camp. How'd that go, Chris?
It was good. Yeah, so we decided back in maybe September or August time, as the team started to come back to work and less furloughs and all that good stuff, that we wanted to start January 2021 off by making sure that all of the team were fully aware of everything that was going on in all the different regions, all the different teams. Everyone was aligned behind the right strategy and the right goals. And actually, it harped us back to March of 2020, and we were due to have a team event at the Westin in Georgetown. And unfortunately, due to the events of the world, all of that got cancelled. But we had probably 100 people coming to that, flying in from all four corners of the world, as far as Australia, Japan, Thailand, all coming to DC for a week of training. And it was called the MDS Camp. So we thought, let's bring that back, but in a virtual format. So we had all the different leaders across Marriott Digital Services pre-record around 2 hours of content, and we edited all those videos up and distributed them throughout the week, so through email and through Slack and all different mediums, and really allowed people to watch content when they wanted to watch it, versus having people in kind of 8 hours of webinars a day and just kind of getting Zoom fatigue, if you will, and just allowing them to take their own pace. So I'd heard people watch them as soon as they came out, right? The email came and it landed in their inbox and they watched it. Some people stored them all up and watched them at the end of the week, and that was fine. It was just how they most felt comfortable. And then we had a couple of hours of live content as well. So we identified maybe two areas which as a group we wanted to improve across the group. And one was working remotely. Candidly, the whole team is now remote. And we had to make sure that everybody felt comfortable in working in that way. So we had an external speaker come and talk about that and about careers and things. And then the second thing was writing and communicating in a presentation form. So we had, again, an external speaker come and talk about how to create great presentations. And I think that blend of some live, albeit through Teams or through Zoom, was and the recorded stuff was a great combination. And then we had some quizzes and some fun stuff throughout the week as well. And it was really a great way to start off the year.
Yeah, I think you guys did an amazing job as a participant. I'll say, I think it was really cool to see how what would have normally been a longstanding MDS event that we've done for at least, 5 years now, transformed into this virtual approach. And you have the same human touch and element and all that great stuff. So I'll butcher it if I try to give thanks, but who would you like to thank for helping architect and put this together with yourself? Because I know you didn't do it alone.
I did not. I mean, I think if you look across the whole team, you've got the whole of the customer success group, the five or six individuals within there, Maria, David, Anita, Jenny, everybody, Sabrina all had an amazing impact. But if you actually take that one step back, we had executive sponsorship for it. So, we had the right leadership pushing that change forward as well. And then everybody who attended, right? So people participated in the quizzes, they participated in the live sessions, they turned up with questions, right? I think you can run the most amazing event, but if people don't turn up, don't watch the videos, don't engage with the content, then you're kind of a bit screwed, to be honest. So really across the board, I think everybody had a contributing factor. And we go back to those videos as well. You know, we had, I think it was 13 or 14 separate individual videos, about 2 hours of content. So kind of short bites. But again, every leader created a video. They did it with passion. They did it with, the view of Happy New Year, even though these were recorded back in November and December. You know, everything was done in a way that was really well done. So just big thanks to everybody involved.
Yeah, congrats again to you and the team. So what would you say, and we'll do a couple of rapid fire questions then get into the news. What did you like the most about producing an event like this? And then what did you like the least?
I think the most was the creative freedom allowed, because we'd never done like a virtual week event like this. We'd always done like week onboardings and things, but not a kind of team training. It was just the ability to come up with an idea and then see it through. So the idea to do a live session or whatever it might be. I think the least piece was, I miss sitting in a bar having a beer with the person that we were just talking to, like that kind of personal out of the office hours type activity. It's not the same through a computer screen. So I think that was probably the lack of the human touch, right? And seeing people that you may have only seen once a year was probably the least share. The least,
we'll have those beers soon enough. I agree. I think that part is sorely missed, but we'll do what we can. I think it's also worth sharing for folks that didn't maybe attend or have the same in-depth view as us. The team put together a dedicated Slack channel where every update was shared out. I think kind of dropped throughout the day. So it was a comprehensive, like every couple hours, there was either a video link or an article link, or some stuff was behind passcode over on a Wix site. So it was really well done. So one last question, and then we'll jump into the news of the week. Let's say we're all able to get together next year and things are relatively normal. Would you want to do this again and reach more people, have time zone considerations built in, or would you rather go back to in person?
I'd actually like to do a combination of the two, right? So if you think about a virtual event, and like anybody that's attended a conference, it's draining, man. Like you get, you know, 8-10 hours of content throughout the day. You have evening events, like the ability to try and cram as much stuff into the day is huge, right? And I think if we can maybe pare that down a little bit and then pepper it with some video based content that people can watch on their own time, would be great. I think also maybe not leaving it a year. So if you said, okay, well, maybe you do the big annual stuff and then pepper these throughout the year. I think, you know, clearly as we progress through 21 and into 2022, the virtual events are ever going to stay around. You know, if you think about previously, this was probably the cost of doing something like this was probably a tenth of the hotel bill. Right.
That's so impressive. Like there's savings there.
So I think in terms of like the virtual environment, I think it's ever going to stay around, unfortunately.
And I think there's some value also in like the self-pacing, the what type of content you can produce in parallel and engage with folks that are on completely different time zones. I agree. I think this hybrid model works pretty well.
Yep.
So why don't we switch into the news, Chris, and we'll keep this rolling. We'll get your takes on the news. So we'll do a little bit of a shorter cut of them, given this impromptu interview with Mr. Robinson, and then we'll get into our guest for the week, who is George Enos. He is our reporting and digital analytics manager with MDS, and we're really excited to talk to him in a few. But on to the news. So I think this one kicks up every couple of years, Chris. Apple has supposedly filed a patent, like they do with just about every invention, that they want to create something that looks like a search engine to compete with Google. I think we all know the default on at least iOS is Google is your default search engine. And there's reports of hundreds of millions of dollars, if not 1 billion of cash that exchanges for Google to be that search engine for Apple. So what do you think about Apple potentially creating their own? Does this have a shot, and does this make any sense in 2021?
Yeah, so this was on this website, patentlyapple.com, and it's a fascinating website if anybody wants to go and look through it. They file patents for absolute, basically anything and anything. I remember even reading one about them creating a travel app a few years ago. It hasn't happened yet, but again, they have the patent for it, I guess. So, and it's been bubbling for a while. I think if you look today at iOS 14 and you swipe to the left, right, and you search for something, it will give you some search results, but it'll also kind of prompt apps. Like they're starting in this space already, right? They're not kind of coming at this cold. If you look through the patent in itself, it's like reading what Google does today, right? They're talking about influence scores, domain credibility. If there's a link from one website to another, that creates credibility for the other website, right? It's all things as SEO marketers. We're telling other businesses of what they have to do to get higher positions within Google. Does it make sense? I mean, if you look at Apple overall, they sold, 190 million devices last year alone. That's how many they shipped. So they have devices in people's pockets. They have devices in people's homes, right? If you look in the Robinson household, we probably have 12 Apple devices across the board, right? That if they can get something within those devices, they have the technology, they have the funding. There's no reason why they can't do it. You also look at things like the shift to mobile search trends. What is it, like 40 to 50% of search trends are now within mobile? If they can dominate that space, you know, you're starting to see where the kind of synergies really do happen. The interesting thing when I was thinking about it, though, is like Google has this thing which is it's now known as the thing, right? So if your wife said to you, hey, like, do you know of X, right? You're like, oh, just Google it. Right. And it's like the same as in the UK, we call Hoover, which is a brand name, is a vacuum, right? And it's like, oh, just Hoover the family room, right? So it's kind of this, people have just known Google as being the search engine. And I think that's where they've got some barriers to overcome. Do they need $1 billion? Probably not. They could just create their own. And Google made what, like $40 billion in ad revenue. So if they can take a proportion of that, they're going to make more money ultimately. And I think there's definite value in it. They're putting some serious weight behind it in terms of roles and employment, right? All of those good things. So it will happen. I'm sure of it. They'll make it the default device on their Apple devices. And that's the search engine that people will use going forward.
The other thing I'd add that I don't think you commented on is privacy. Is Apple is so obsessed with that. And that's a really good approach for, I think, 2021 that probably was a little tone deaf 5 or so years ago and people were talking about it, but I think it means so much more now. I believe, and I don't fully understand this, so maybe this is a future guest conversation, is it seems like cookies are dying or going the way of the dodo at some point. So all the increased privacy, cleared browser history, all of those foundational things that don't share data to second and third parties really seem to be with prominence. Apple just launched something called Login with Apple. So if you go to a service, you can see and log with an Apple ID, and that it doesn't require a passcode. And it just basically just like passes your information over without any personal bits kind of floating to a third party. So again, I agree. I think at some point it'll probably be there. Will you probably switch back to Google? I might myself, but you know, you never know.
It all depends on the customer experience, right? If your experience is better within an Apple search engine, you probably stay there, right? Yeah. If it's not like Apple Maps, then you'll probably, you know,
great.
I stay within Waze, right? So it's all about the customer experience ultimately.
All right, so let's keep the SEO and search chat going. So you may have also seen that TikTok and Instagram TV videos are now in Google search results. This has been Google playbook for years, right? They basically will go in, they'll crawl, they'll grab an element, and they'll put it into search. Their take of it is they're exposing information to users that they want to see in a more frictionless and easy to understand format. One might consider that theft of property. It depends on your point of view of things. But what's your take on this, Chris? Is this fundamentally adding to the search experience or just cluttering up the page?
I mean, I think this takes us back to right in episode 1 where Josh was talking about SEO and kind of the 5 things. And, you know, there's hundreds of changes to SEO every year, right? And there's some more bigger annual updates and some more frequent from other updates. I think ultimately, it's providing content to users, right? So I went on this morning and was like, okay, well, how does it work, right? So you search up Washington, D.C. hotels, Instagram and TikTok videos do not appear in the search results. However, if you search up bread recipes, they do, right? And YouTube videos appear there. And from some research, it shows that like they were showing YouTube videos first and then they progressed into getting other videos. And you can understand the link between somebody searching bread recipes or pizza recipes or whatever that might be and experiencing the search results of a video, clicking through to the video and watching it. Now, whether I would watch a recipe on TikTok versus someone on YouTube, that's questionable to your own personal taste, but I think ultimately I can understand the customer experience of why they have done that.
Yeah, I think it's also good to know too that all the Google information, it's beyond your smartphone, it's beyond your desktop right now. It's in places like Google Home Hub, which is their visual display. And Chris, I can honestly see you cooking a pizza recipe with your Google Home up, watching a video of someone, you know, phonetically baking pizza, getting a recipe and doing it yourself. So I could see all that working, because I think it is important, the joke aside, that all these elements are beyond just text on page, right? This is basically sucking it into the Google ecosystem and putting it in other places that people want. And at some point we'll be the old folks and no one will be watching YouTube videos anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like we're doing some renovations around the house, and I think I must have done, I don't know, 4 or 5 things in the last 4 or 5 weeks where I've gone to YouTube, learn what it is, or searched on Google, found a video, gone to YouTube, learned what it is, done that task at hand. Now it may have taken me 10 times as longer as what the video was, but it just shows this kind of people wanting instructional led content, and that's probably why it's now surfaced within the search results.
Agree. So let's do one more topic and then we'll get on with George. So I think you know this as well as anybody. As we move into the new year, before we know it, we'll be in budgeting season again, traditionally for the hotel world. Summer and then early fall is when you're finalizing your budgets, sharing them with marketing partners, talking with agencies. And 2020 was very, very different in any respect. Any budgets are slashed when you go back and look at data in 2021 for the previous year in 2020. It's going to look quite different. Spending patterns are off. Vendor projections are off. Everything's a bit different. So if you were to give advice for a hotelier or an operator to basically put together what budgeting for 2021 might look like, because again, everything got kind of pushed back. What would you recommend that someone focus on? We saw a good article come out from HSMAI talking about how budgeting for 2021 needs to be fluid. There's a lot of uncertainty in the times. That's all well and good, but you also need to put dollars down to make marketing decisions. So what are your thoughts on 2021 marketing budgets, Chris?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look through that article from the HSMAI, there was two related loosely to, but one more focused on budgets and one kind of more loosely focused on it. And they asked a range of different marketing experts on kind of how are they approaching 2021? And there was some divided opinion, some folks focusing on this like top-down approach. So if you think about the company as a national company, we're just going to market this, right? And some other people saying, well, no, actually, I think you should do it from a bottom-up approach. So the individual kind of unit or hotel, and based on their different kind of economic needs. I think one thing that they did kind of confirm, though, was that everybody had multiple plans. You know, they had plan A, plan B, plan C, and plan D, all for those kind of different scenarios. Very much focusing in the digital space, right? Social media spend, SEO spend. Even some people saying, you know, like if you're cash strapped at the minute, focus on the things that really, truly, truly matter. So kind of get rid of the noise. And one thing that they referenced was, again, going back to our previous conversation about Google, was maybe you focus on web design. You know, there's some big changes coming with Google next year, focusing on usability. So, and if your website's 4 or 5 years old, then maybe now's the time to get that redesigned. I think, the other piece is like reading through the articles, like someone said that they've even now started focus on radio advertising because wow. if you think about, and I was like, that's crazy. But then you think about it, I can understand it, right? If you live in the Maryland area today, you're allowed to travel to Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, and Pennsylvania without any kind of restrictions. If you want to go further afield, there's testing, there's isolation periods, there's all of those good things and travel restrictions in play. So how do you really focus on people and geo-target them around like in Maryland? Then maybe radio is a good spot for people. And they even joked that they felt that they'd gone back 20 years, right? Because that was what was happening in the early 2000s. So there's a lot of different changes. I think marketing your hotel or your business to the pros and cons of the business, which is, and the scenario that you find yourself in. So hotels are now saying, we'll take pets when they maybe didn't take pets before. Or they're saying, hey, we have outside corridors. When did you think the outside hallways and corridors would be a pro, right? It is now, because people want to be outside. So I think multiple planning, promoting the services and situation that you're in, and be very, very flexible to change. Because you know as well as I do, like, we were planning a trip back to the UK, 4 days ago. Now we're like, maybe that's not happening, right? Because of all the, and it just changes instantly. And I think as a business, you have to be flexible to that, and have multiple plans, and just make sure that you really focus on the things which you're good at.
That concept of plans A through D definitely does resonate when your whole life and business strategy needs to be fluid. So awesome. Well, Chris, thanks for your takes on the news. As always, we'll include articles. The article links in the show notes at the bottom of your podcast player. As alluded to at the top, we've got a special guest today to go over a fantastic topic of digital reporting analytics, and a little bit of bonus talk around building out site structure and architecture for systems and apps. So today we're joined by George Enos, our reporting manager. How are you, George?
Doing great. Thanks, Mike. Great to be with you and Chris today.
Great to have you. So we're still or more or less in the New Year spirit, right? Do you have a specific New Year's resolution or theme?
I do. I guess it's more of a theme, and that theme is lowering entropy with the intent of being of service to others. So to explain that a little bit, about maybe 6 years ago, I came across this guy, Tom Campbell. And Tom is a former NASA physicist turned consciousness explorer, and he wrote this trilogy of books. It's called My Big Toe, where toe stands for theory of everything. Now, I wouldn't come close to summarizing the books in any reasonable amount of time, but he draws this correlation between the concept of entropy in physics to human consciousness. So with entropy being a lack of order or predictability or a gradual decline into disorder. Like physical matter can have a high or low entropy state, but so can your own consciousness. And like a high entropy state of consciousness would be a very, fear-based, ego-driven, selfish, self-centered, whereas a low entropy state of consciousness is essentially love. It's low fear, low ego, more about other than self. Now, you could derive that same concept from any number of philosophies. But anyway, this high entropy, low entropy thing stuck with me, and I try to apply it. So that's my theme. So I try to apply it to mind through meditation practice. It helps me be more present, to be of service to others in my immediate family, in my community. I apply it to body, which ultimately for every human will gradually decline into disorder. But there are things you can do to keep it in a low entropy state while you're here. And, it's maybe more important now than ever to keep your immune system strong. So I guess to pick a specific resolution that is in alignment with all of that, in 2021, I think it would be really beneficial to me personally to probably adjust my media consumption in a way that keeps me at a safe enough distance so as to not get sucked into a high entropy state of mind. You hear people talk about going down the rabbit hole online, right? And I think it could be like a black hole if you let it, like in the sense that around the black hole, there's that event horizon, like the point of no return. That once something goes past the event horizon, the gravitational pull is such that there's no going back. So, I mean, I think, there's black holes out there of all sorts of media. So I want to stay informed, but only so much as it actually is useful and in alignment with my intent, which is to be of service.
I totally hear that. I have a good best practice. I need to stop my Twitter doom scrolling when I wake up. Right? that's awesome to hear. That's an amazingly like deep take on like mental and physical fitness and all that stuff. So that's awesome to hear that you're digging into that with yourself. And I'd love to get check-ins as you go. Right. So with that, I think that's probably a pretty good primer for how your brain works. George, can you tell us about your role at MDS and what you do?
Yep. So within Marriott Digital Services, I sit on the business support team as manager of reporting, where I serve as the product lead for MDS reporting platforms and I'm responsible for the development and distribution of reporting deliverables to both MDS clients and our internal teams.
That's awesome. It's a function that I know we started having that practice up about, was it Chris, probably 4 years or so ago, where we basically launched that discipline, that concept of like reporting isn't a little bit of people's jobs. It's there's a core and there's a foundation from which people can plug into and tap into, but you need someone whose responsibility set is to look over that at the macro level and build on all that. So we're thrilled to have you here, George. Here you have a really interesting background ranging everywhere from web development to working for a bar association. And then after some adventures, you landed back in hospitality. So what's the quick story on George's background before joining MDS? Because this is an exciting one.
I guess I kind of zigged and zagged in and out of hospitality there for a minute. I had majored in hospitality management at UCF in Orlando, Florida, after being undeclared for probably as long as you could be, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so as a hobby, I would build these little websites and connect them to databases and teach myself like graphic design out of necessity. But for whatever reason, I didn't really think I wanted to do that kind of stuff for work, for my career. And so I had been to some big conventions at the Orange County Convention Center in Orlando, like Surf Expo, and I was really blown away by like the complexity of the whole operation, bringing big events like that together. And so I had done an internship with the convention center, and my first job out of college was as events and continuing legal education manager for the Orange County Bar Association, the lawyers in Orlando. And in that job, I started designing collateral for various things, and it caught the eye of the owner of the printing company who was producing the Bar Association's monthly publication and annual membership directory. So anyway, long story short, I ended up working for that printing company in partnership with the Bar Association. So I did design work, advertising, sales for the publication, and I had pitched the idea of bringing their membership directory online and creating this online lawyer referral network. And that was back when like MySpace was still big and LinkedIn wasn't really what it is today. So I ended up designing, coding, launching this lawyer referral network. And you know, at that point I was like, okay, I'm taking a different direction. But then the printing company and the Bar Association ended up not working together anymore. And as a result, I was out of work, but as luck would have it, I got introduced to the brother of the owner of the printing company was with a franchise hotel franchise management company, and they had an e-commerce position open, and I interviewed for it, and they hired me, and I worked in three different roles with them before joining Marriott. The company was called JHM Hotels, and it's owned by a great family, the Rama family brothers, and they'll always have a special place in my heart. They're called Aro Hotels now, I think. So anyway, I came on board with Marriott and worked in a number of different roles within the various iterations of Marriott's field marketing organization. And in every one, I was kind of like the internal go-to for reporting and building of reports, but it was never actually my job. So just prior to joining MDS, I was the operations manager for the Americas Brand Marketing and Digital Organization, where I was the admin and did development work on their instance of Salesforce. And I just fell in love with Salesforce. And in my spare time, I dove headfirst into learning Salesforce development, which is perfect because now I still work in Salesforce a great deal. And the primary reporting platform that I work with is a Salesforce product. So I don't know how interesting any of that was, but I'm really happy to be here and it feels like I'm in the right place.
No, I think it's awesome. I think it shows the diverse background skills you bring, right? Because I think one thing about Salesforce that I've just observed from the 6 months we've been at it is having that kind of like web design eye and so forth is really helpful when you're designing data structures and reports and dashboards and stuff, right? Because it's a lot bigger than Excel and a database behind the scenes.
Totally.
You were at college and you were designing these websites and building databases, and then you did that in pretty much every role that you've been in, right? Kind of the lawyer referral network, and then the instance of Salesforce within the brand marketing digital team, and now you're at MDS, you're building a reporting platform. So what is it about this development around kind of solutions architecture that you really like?
I mean, I think there's just something at the core of my being that is driven to form order out of chaos. And so back to that theme of entropy. So again, a lack of order or predictability or gradual decline into disorder, those conditions precede and necessitate the development work on a particular solution. And so I love doing my part to solve a problem or a business need. And then specifically within that space, I love the actual writing of scripts and formulas and code that creates the automation that backs or enables the solution I'm developing to solve a problem. And when I'm working on something like that, I just become completely immersed. I've heard it called flow state, if you ever heard creative flow state. Like I lose track of time and it doesn't feel like work. I'm not like, oh man, I can't wait for this shift to end. I'm in the zone. And there's something so satisfying, like almost soothing to me, to see something that I've built functioning as intended. And then seeing that it's serving its intended purpose and actually solving a problem is really rewarding. You know, I actually have a pen and a mouse pad on my desk right now. And they're given to me by colleagues in my previous role at Marriott, who I love very much. They had these made for me, and there's a little tagline on them that's kind of an inside joke. But under that, it says, if you have a problem, George will solve it. And that just means so much to me, because that's what I try to do in work and in life in general. That's what I love.
When we talk about reporting and analytics, we all hear about big data and using it to drive business intelligence and business insights. So in your eyes, George, how does a business really get serious in using data to their overall advantage?
Yeah, we do hear all that talk about big data. And well, I think it's pretty clear that leveraging data to inform strategy is a necessity to almost any business. And I would imagine that if someone is starting their own business, that they would have to become a data champion of sorts. And in existing businesses, there's at least one person or entire departments dedicated to, you know, this big data marketing analytics. But you know, how does a business get serious about using data to their advantage? I think that happens when everyone in the business or at the company is serious, or everyone at least understands the impact. And for that to happen, I think it perhaps has to be more relatable. And so now I'm not the smartest person in any given room on big data or you know, anything else for that matter, but I have heard it said in a way that resonated with my own experience on the topic by someone who I respect a great deal. It's this concept of making it real. And just to give proper attribution here, that comes from Brian King at Marriott, who I think is well known outside the company as well. And I heard that just repeated just last week by another leader at Marriott, Lee Zarelli, make it real. And I think that while the context was more around digital technology in general, when I heard it most recently, I think with data being a big part of that, the point that was being made rings true, which is that, you know, those of us working inside this space in which big data is a real thing, we can speak in such technical terms and with so much jargon that it can sound like another language and be unrelatable. So we have to make it real to everyone. So in my personal experience, keeping in mind a big part of my background is in field marketing, where a lot of what I was doing involved translating, if you will, or making real the activation of data-driven strategies out of headquarters to the regional and hotel level. So asking for buy-in from GMs and sales and revenue counterparts, hotel owners, actually presenting the business case, asking for the money, communicating what the potential return on a data-driven strategy would be. It was always helpful to me, at least, to not focus on the minutia of it all and focus on how it contributes to the overall business objectives and how everyone can really support a data-driven strategy, which I think is true. You know, in our industry, from the C-level desk to the front desk, it's got to be real. And you know, sometimes I have to get out of my own little bubble and kind of see the big picture from different points of view and remind myself. Because what we sell in the hotel industry, it's a product that's a perishable inventory, a room that can be either sold or not sold every night. But what do we really sell? What's the value? What do we provide? And I think that's experiences. So on another side of big data, I think if a business is using all of the personalization data correctly, not only is it an acquisition strategy, but it's also the personalization of the experience, creating customer loyalty as well.
I love that idea of making it easy, making it understandable, making it relatable, that type of thing. I often try and think when we're talking about data with any business, and anyone can take this mindset, is think about it as like you're trying to teach your mom what you're talking about, or my 10-year-old daughter ultimately. And if I can talk to the other person like I'm talking to my 10-year-old daughter about my work product, I'm pretty confident they're going to understand, and not talking within their kind of ecosystem of language, because it is very different.
You're right. I love that.
George and Chris, thanks for laying a primer on what big data is, why it's important. And I'll echo Chris. I love this concept of making it real. So I think the next question we've got for you, George, it only further articulates that, right? I think we all know that every system has some degree of data associated with it. If it's looking at a simple revenue report, or if it's looking at something like Google Analytics or Adobe Analytics when you're analyzing your website, we all know that you can open up those screens and sometimes you have a little paralysis or anxiety about what you should look at, what you should do, what's important here, what's not. So if you were to say someone who's just getting their sea legs with this or walking back into it for the first time in a while, what are like five metrics related to digital marketing that you might urge a hotel or an owner and operator to look at?
Yeah, I like the way you framed that up, because there's really a lot of different ways to approach this one. But I like to start by looking at all points of sale within a business, so digital or otherwise. In the hotel business, we'd look at room night channel mix. And you could draw the proper correlation to another business, channel mix. So out of all possible channels you could receive a booking from, maybe your brand website, an online travel agency website, a phone call, a group or group intermediary business, what's your channel mix? And then out of overall channel mix, how much of that mix is represented by digital channels? Within those digital channels, which is your lowest cost booking channel? And what are the costs associated with driving traffic and ultimately conversion through those digital channels? It's almost always the case that booking direct or purchasing direct through a business's own website is the lowest cost booking channel, and marketing vehicles that either you own, like email marketing, or that are earned, like natural search, tend to be lower cost methods of driving traffic and ultimately conversion. So with all of that said, I think you could actually have several sets of top five most important digital metrics, but focusing on just direct on your own site, I would start with one, visits overall, and then start to look at your traffic sources. So where are those visits coming from? There's paid traffic sources, so like paid search, display advertising, affiliate advertising, and so on. You've got earned traffic sources, which would be just direct visits or through email marketing, or earned, like natural search, social, and inbound links that you receive that you're not actually paying for. So now you have your visits, but you also want to look at conversion rate. So how many of those visits are converting? And that's where you can really hone in on your content strategy, focusing on engaging content that results in conversions rather than bounces. And I think total cost per acquisition is important to look at it as well. And that could fill an entire podcast on its own. So I think I landed on overall room night channel mix, digital channel mix, digital direct channel mix, conversion rate, and total cost per acquisition.
And we'll make sure that we publish that top five in the show notes too. But I think that's a great way to think about the just the customer journey of like you basically find a business through some sort of medium. You are a visitor in the large scheme of things. And if you can kind of map through like what you bought, what you consumed along the way, and what that whole experience might look like to be able to then figure out, are we going to repeat? Are we going to come back? Is that, or did we even determine that like that person is not worth our time and they're not worth our acquisition costs? So I think that's a great primer. So I think with all this data that we're looking at, you know, in the simplest way you can sum it up, what is the near minimum range you want someone to look at to get some insights out of this data? Because we all know that if you look at 2 days or 3 days, it's meaningless. If you look at a week or a month, depending on the channel, it's meaningless. It all depends. But if you were to give someone an absolute of like, always look at X amount of data for making a decision, what would that be?
Sure. So I think the most historic data you have, the better informed your strategy can be. And traditionally in the hotel marketing space, we focused on timeframes like same time last year and year over year. And you know, there's good logic behind that, because over time, like a business mix and booking channel mix for a region or a brand or a collection of brands or for individual properties didn't really have wild variances. It was pretty predictable to an extent. So if your digital strategy was to drive occupancy with transient, when historically there wasn't a lot of group, you know, based on historic data, you could plan a strategy pretty far out to target specific timeframes, and you could look at results versus same time last year, have a pretty solid idea of the effectiveness of the strategy. But now, you know, within the space that I we work in, you know, at the time of us recording this podcast, it's January 2021, and that historic data has kind of flipped on its head from what's been happening, the happenings of 2020, current events. Group hotel business still is not really there. Transient mix is up at the percentage. And when I look at the data in the reports that I'm building, I think for this year at least, year over year, same time last year, are going to look so drastically different. We're going to be in this recovery mode, and hopefully eventually we'll have a new normal, so to speak, in data trends based on which we're making decisions. But right now it's much shorter timelines and rapidly changing dynamics, which is challenging. But I'm a optimist. I think there are going to be so many learnings that could come out of all of this that will inform future strategies when we do reach some form of normalcy, which I think we will. So, to wrap that up, the longer the time frame you have to compare to, like the same time you tried a specific tactic previously, and what were the, you know, what were the learnings from that you could apply to better optimizing it the next time you give it a go.
So, George, you mentioned that those kind of five metrics that you want to look at, you know, the cost of acquisition and the digital channel mix, and, you know, that also different date ranges, you know, obviously that might vary by where the hotel is or the business is. Do you have maybe a favorite platform or tool to help you kind of navigate all of those different questions when asked a question from a stakeholder, for example?
I do. And you heard me profess my love earlier for Salesforce. And I've got to say that my favorite reporting platform has become a Salesforce product called Datarama. And to explain why that is, in digital and in marketing, we hear, get the right message to the right creative in front of the right customer at the right time. And part of my job is to get the right performance dashboard or the right report to the correct MDS client or an internal team. And Datarama enables this. The data classification and user access provisioning capabilities based on Salesforce input are really amazing with the platform. So like I can write SQL queries to classify and match performance data with customer data from Salesforce via API. you can provision and automate client access in real time in a way that ensures that out of this massive amount of data in the platform, individual users see exactly what they're supposed to see and nothing that they're not supposed to see. And then in terms of what they're seeing, the data visualization itself, I love the ability to customize reports and dashboards with your own HTML, CSS, JavaScript to create an engaging user experience. And that's when you'll catch me in that flow state. When I get in there, I've been late to a few MDS calls because I've lost track of the time. And then in terms of data management, I just haven't seen anything that comes close in terms of the ability to connect multiple data sources and harmonize them within one platform. Just with the out of the box connectors available, there are like more than 100 of them, anything from Adobe Analytics to anything Google to social. Really amazing with what you can connect or build your own custom APIs. Yeah, just really, really impressed with the Salesforce Datarama platform.
And ladies and gentlemen, he is not compensated for that opinion. That is the no. reality of George and the platform. And I think even from your comments on theme of the beginning about entropy and focus and presence and all that type of stuff, I think what I've even seen from Datarama, and I will tell you, I used Salesforce when my first job out of college, and now and seeing what it's come together since then has been unbelievable, the evolution and how they basically built out that marketing cloud. I know that's probably not the right phrase anymore, but that ecosystem of stuff is super powerful. And I think agreed, anything that we've thrown at it, it can ingest and display back out in a way that's meaningful and helpful with a little bit of sanding around the edges here and there, right? Nothing's perfect out of the box, but that's why we've got tools, time, and then frankly, your role and function, right? So with that, I think we wanted to, George, thank you for spending the time with us today and educating us a little bit more about how we should think or rethink about our digital marketing and how we can rewire our brain. So thanks for joining Chris and I today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. This has been great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, George. So thanks for listening. We're grateful that you joined this journey with us. You can also get in touch with the podcast over on Twitter. We're at MDS_decoded. You can also email us at mds@mario.com, and we welcome any questions. And if you do have a question, then you can email us and we'll cover it on the show and make sure that we give it the time it deserves. If you like today's conversation and you can spare a few minutes to share a review on iTunes, that would be really fantastic. It does help more people find the show and ensure that we're sharing this knowledge and the expertise of people like George with more and more people. The next episode of this 10-part series will be released in 2 weeks, so make sure you hit subscribe to be notified of when that new episode goes live. You can enjoy this podcast on any good podcast app, and you can learn more about digital marketing at mdsdecoded.com. Thanks for listening.